This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Hi, I'm Tony La Russa, and you're listening to Baseball Outside the Box with Pete Caliendo.
This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome back to Baseball Outside the Box, a podcast for coaches, players, and parents from all over the world where we bring you the most innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds who love to challenge the status quo. Hello again, everyone. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Listen, before we start the second half with Tony La Russa, just wanted to mention a couple things. Don't forget to, you know, help us on social media, spread the word around the world about the show. We've got some great people that we interview. Testimony today to Hall of Famer Tony La Russa. Get us at Twitter at Baseball Out, our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/baseballoutsidethebox. Love getting your emails at info@baseballoutsidethebox.com. Let us know about people you want us to interview. Any baseball questions you have, you can send questions ahead of time because we'll ask other guests questions. And we're always working to get answers for you to make you a better coach, player, and also a better parent. To helping your kids become better players. Lastly, you cannot forget, you've got to go out and purchase, and Tony's not going to tell me this. This was something I do on my own because I've read both his books. They are outstanding. They're not just outstanding. They're coaching Bibles. I mean, they don't just talk about stories, and he relates stories to actual things that happen in games, but it's a coaching clinic. One is called One Last Strike, and the other one was Tony La Russa, A Man on a Mission. So go out and get that. You can get that at Amazon. You can get them everywhere. And if you didn't know One Last Strike, a lot of coaches didn't know this. And if you get it on audio books, a lot of times you'll have some videos included with that and also some graphics of some pitch charts and things that Tony did throughout his career. All right, let's not waste any time. Now we're back with Hall of Famer, manager, and three-time world champion, Tony La Russa. Tony, we're going to continue. Again, we'll do our best here to get these questions in, and we are on a time schedule, so we'll see what we can get done here. First thing, let's start with some of the things that coaches have a difficulty with. You know, a lot of coaches, including myself and others, you know, going through a loss. It's tough, right? I mean, nobody likes losing. I'm sure you were very competitive, but you had a special rule because a lot of coaches, a lot of times after a game, they want to talk to their players at all levels, you know, young kids, high school kids, college, but you had a special rule that was called the 24-hour rule. Can you explain that and why you used it and how it really helped you in this area?
The 24-hour rule was really specific to when you were really upset with a team, or if you were upset with an individual or a few individuals. You're upset, but you're burning up about something that they did wrong. And out here again, I was taught this. The worst thing you can do is, with the emotion of the moment, to confront it, because you're very likely to say something that you regret. Mm. So if I was really upset, like I say, at the team or an individual, I would do the 24-hour ride. I'd let it sit to be sure that the next day when I talked about it, and you don't want to let it go, you want to talk about it. You talked about it where you got some sanity back. And if you wanted to take a hard shot at somebody, well, you thought about it, but it was a mental decision, not an emotional one. The other side to that is that, you know, things happen during the game, and, you know, you just have to trust your gut. There are times I'd walk through the clubhouse after a game, and I'd say three things and walk out. You can't have too many meetings because they wear people out. I'd rather wait, talk to people individually. But the one thing, I'll tell you one version of this, Pete, which I think is really important. You lose a tough game, and all of a sudden you walk in the clubhouse and you see guys are really discouraged. They're frustrated, and they got their backs to the clubhouse, looking into their locker. They're all hunched over. It's very quiet. In that case, I'd walk in and I'd start, you know, chirping pretty loudly. Hey, man, this is not us. This is not helpful. It's a tough loss. And the point is this. if you suffer a tough loss and you do that kind of discouraging, frustrated, I'm trying to talk that way too, what happens is the energy just seeps out of your body, man. You just get so low. And I always would say, hey, look, we just got beaten. Rather than sit here and mope and lose all our energy, get up, take a shower. Let's get out of here. Just get angry. And I would coach anger all the time, because anger means adrenaline, means, hey, I'm going to attack the problem. I'm going to confront it. I'm going to fix it. So that's one thing that I did that very consistently, did not try to allow frustrations and just say, look, you know, that's one of the things I think as a manager, as a coach, you know, you're the leader. You when you have something that you believe in, a philosophy or a strategy or whatever, well, yeah, you know, if you believe it, assert it. And that's one that I asserted, you know, just get angry. Don't get frustrated.
Did you have any special rules after a loss in the clubhouse, you know, music, non-music? Like you said, you want them to maybe get out of there and just, you know, clear their minds. Was there anything else you did? Because a lot of times some teams, you know, they have trips on a bus. High school teams might have a trip on a bus back to the high school, or a college team, same thing. Was there any special rules you had?
Here's what I would recommend. I had like a 10-minute rule. And you know, I didn't always have, because a lot of times the team was doing it automatically. But if we were screwing up, for example, once you lose a game, there are players on that team that have struggled. And to be respectful to the family, you don't want to walk in there and turn music on and start whistling or singing a song, or, you know, having a conversation nowadays on your cell phone and stuff immediately after the game. Because what are you saying to your teammate? Hey, I don't care about your suffering. I don't care about us losing. Well, I would always say, you know, if you don't care, you better fake it. Because if that's the attitude that you're going to have, sooner or later, if I figure it out, you're out of here. But in the meantime, if you fake it, then you can survive a little longer. So the 10-minute rule was something that the team understood, that when we got beat, you could get three hits and you're feeling pretty good about your contribution, or a pitcher could have pitched seven shutout innings and then we blew it in the end. You could feel good about yours, but out of respect to your teammates, you were going to control your emotions and your actions. But then at some point, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, it's very important especially in professional baseball. And so it would be the same with high school, I think, and college. But at some point, you got to put that game behind you. You got to turn the page and start getting excited about the next one. And what you want to do with the one you just lost is, okay, we're going to spend some time, you know, as part of the turning the page, we're going to think about, you know, what we learned about how we can do it better. But normally we would have the 10-minute rule, and then I had the clubhouse guy turn on the music. And the whole point was, all right, we lost that game. We're gonna pay attention tomorrow. We'll come out here and coach and I will talk to you about, look, we got to cut off and relay better or whatever it is. But a big part of surviving, like in Major League Baseball, 162 games, you know, you can't get so concerned about the game you just lost, carry it over and lose more. At some point, you got to keep the slate clean and start getting excited. You're going to learn what you just did wrong, and you're going to put it towards playing better tomorrow.
Yeah, that's great. And I think that's going to help a lot of high school and also colleges and even teams around the world that are listening to the show. I remember the great scene when I was a young kid. I want to know how you would handle this. I remember Billy Martin and Reggie Jackson. There was a play where he didn't hustle a ball out, and Billy didn't like it, obviously. And I believe he came back and they got into a heated argument. How would you, in that situation, if you had that happen, how would you deal with that?
Well, you try your very, 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 very best to keep anything like that private among the family.
Yeah.
And if you're going to do it out in the dugout, well, the writers, the TV, everybody's going to see it, and it's going to have humongous implications. They won't let it go. I mean, for weeks afterwards, somebody will be trying to get it started again because it's so juicy.
Yeah.
So you wanted to avoid anything out there. It had to be. It's like it was one time I had a famous player that didn't run the ball out, and that was one of our rules: run the ball out, or you're not going to play. And he did it about three or four times, two or three times, And after the first time, you know, you make a little comment, hey, that's not us. The second time, come on now. I mean, can't let you get away with this. Well, by the time he did a third time, then you know, right there in front of everybody, because you got to, you never want to lose the team. And if they think that you're not big rules, you lose their respect. So, you know, finally, you know, well, before, after the third time, I made sure the players knew, hey, after the game, you come right in my office. So they knew, right? Well, the fourth time it happened, then right there in front of everybody, just challenge the guy, and you know, and just, but that's, you want to try. That's only happened once or twice in all the years I managed, because, like I say, if you treat it like it's your son or your daughter. You know, if you have a problem with them, you don't call the TV and the radio and say, hey, this is my problem. My family, you know, my daughter or my son stayed out after curfew. No, you handle it privately.
Interesting. I love hearing that. You know, and I also remember watching you on television, and I know some people have written about this, you know, during games, you know, it's manager, you have different type of managers, but every time the camera was on you, and obviously you didn't know the camera was going to be on you all the time, you were losing by 10 or winning by 10 or whatever it was, you kind of had the same look all the time. Was that on purpose? What's the reason? Anything you could give our coaches and managers an idea how you handled games on a daily basis like that?
Well, I really think it starts out with the message you want to send your team, the guys in the dugout, because the guys, maybe the hitter doesn't know it. If you're on defense, the guys on defense don't know it. But when there's a struggle or a bad play, you know, and you're just ranting in the dugout about your horse manure here, and by your, can't you do this? Well, the guys listening gonna say, hey, if it was me, that's how he's gonna get on me. Or then they'll tell their teammates. So what you want to say is something. You're always aware that how you're gonna come across your team. You don't want to ignore it. If a guy miscomment, you know, come on, man, that's not the way we play. Gotta hit that cutoff, man. And as soon as the guy comes off here, come on, hit the cutoff, man. But you don't beat guys down and step on them. So that's part of it, is what the team is. And you always want to show the team, even if this team scores five, hey, man, we'll score a couple here, we'll get back in the game. You know, so you're always sending messages to your team. The other PS, though, is nowadays in baseball with the TV camera always on you, they're hoping to get you, you know, throwing stuff or chewing out somebody.
Oh, yeah, that sells.
That sells. So yeah. Man, I was always aware, and I was talking. It would be productive talking. You know, hey, runner on second. Now we got to get the guy over. You know what that means? Got a good pitch to hit. You know, get to on top of the ball. You know, don't get it in the air. You know, I would always do that stuff for encouraging. Mm-hmm. Somebody, once in a while, I'd yell out, come on, now swing the bat or something. But I would not be real obvious what was going inside my stomach and my head. Because, you know, you just don't want you don't want the public to misinterpret it, and you don't want your players to misinterpret it.
And you know what? I think that's a big deal with your players, because, like you said, I mean, if you're kind of even keeled, then it makes them relax a little bit. And, you know, if you're always up and down, I would think that, you know, there's pressure on players also at all levels, and it's a little tougher for, you know, for players to deal with that. So they kind of follow your lead, I guess, what I'm saying.
Exactly. I mean, I never give up, never give in. I mean, it's very clear when you're giving up, and it's very clear when you're giving in, and it's very clear when you're getting, you know, we may be up by five runs with three outs, and you're whistling and telling the equipment guy to pack the bats. You know, that's baseball guys will hear you, and they're going to slap you, but you want your players, we're going to play 9 innings, 27 outs, or hopefully for us on the offense, 24 outs. But you're going to go, we're going to go. And if, as a coach, if they see that you're still grinding, you know, if you're winning 10-0, losing 10-0, well, then you're sincere and they trust you.
Well, you know, one of the greatest compliments given to a Japanese team that we actually took in the spring training with the White Sox, this was after you were with the White Sox, we played some rookie ball teams and A-ball clubs. And, you know, we'd be down 10 runs and some of the coaches from the White Sox would come over and, you know, they thought the game was tied because there wasn't a scoreboard. And the reason being is because the Japanese play exactly what you're saying, hard every pitch, every out, no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, it's a mindset, and you'd be surprised. You do that enough, and all of a sudden you start swinging games your way that normal teams would give up because they couldn't come back. If you never give in, never give up, you know, a few times a year, you're going to win a game that the other team that you're trying to beat will not. And there's an edge that you get in the standings.
Yeah, that's great. And all right, let me do this, Tony. I'm going to take you to spring training for a second. We got about three more questions. And the reason I want to take you to spring training, because I think it's going to help with a lot of coaches. I've been to spring training. I've been to some clubs. I actually been involved a few times. And, you know, obviously it's a time to work on fundamentals. But the question I have for you is, they work on the fundamentals in spring training. How can you be assured that those fundamentals are going to carry throughout the whole season? What did you do? Did you do anything throughout the season to keep up those fundamentals? Because I know it's a long season, and that may be tough to do.
Well, I think one of the most important things that you learn, especially in professional baseball, and it would translate into other levels, the training part before the real game start is absolutely essential. If you have kind of a haphazard, lackadaisical attitude to just, hey, let's just throw the ball around a little bit and get in shape, and, you know, let's not really dig too deep in the fundamental learning and the practices, you're going to go into the season and you won't be really ready. And one of the truths, especially, you know, minor leagues, you can take guys out early. In big leagues, it's very hard to take them out and pick up basics that you didn't establish in spring training. So we really concentrated. Every day in spring training was a critical day. And we figure if it's 6 weeks and you pound the most important things early and often, then you'll have them when the season starts. And then once the season starts, you know, once there's a mistake, you say, wait a minute, you know, we just talked about, you know, I'll give you time. Well, let me see, 11 different times, 12 times during the spring training, we worked on hitting the cutoff band. You know, what you do as an outfielder, what you do as an infielder, and, you know, you just remind them. And then maybe you have a little dress rehearsal before, you know, during a practice. But the point I'm making is the practice time before games is absolutely critical to set the foundation for what really good execution in baseball is, fundamental baseball is about.
You know, I think that's extremely important what you just said, because we have now a lot of teams in the, you know, especially in the Midwest, you know, that they're trying to play all year round, and even though it's cold, they'll work out indoors, but they play so many more games nowadays that they forget to practice during the season. So I'm glad you brought that up. And the other part I wanted to ask you about spring training, because I've seen both, you know, sides of this. One, you know, they're doing a lot of drills, but they didn't do the drills at game speed. They just, you know, an example would be, you know, they're working on bunting, and the guy's throwing 40 miles an hour on bunting. Then I'm thinking, well, that's not going to work when you get into a ball game. What did you do, and how did you control that? Because some guys kind of, like you said, go through the motion. So how did you discipline that or work it out with the players?
Well, you use machines a lot, you know, but you don't, you know, it's a training time. So you don't want, you know, you don't want to send that machine at 95, you know, but, you know, 85, because you really worked on the fundamental. Mm-hmm. And the game will speed up, but you'll speed up with it. You know, we would do the bunt. You know, you just have to bring variety. I think variety is a lot of times stimulating the guys. You know, we would have a walkthrough with a bunt defense. Then we'd pick good half speed, and then we would do it at real speed. Then we'd go back, you know, just so it's, you don't bore them with it. But, you know, a lot of the infield play that you, the defensive drills, you're better off doing those things kind of slower paced, mm-hmm. so that you get the fundamentals exactly right, because the game will speed you up automatically. And if you try to practice at kind of a frenetic pace, you know, like you're rushing every ball that sits to you, Ricky Henderson's running to first base, then you're not going to get the basics down. So I just think here's the key, I think, for coaches. You got to take the time to figure out, okay, what are we working on? What's the upside? What's the downside? And if upside means don't rush it, then don't rush it. If the downside is that going slow is bad, then you got to go faster. So it just puts a premium on you being very realistic, and just don't get dogmatic and repeat something. Figure it out for yourself what your team needs and how you're going to coach it.
That's great. And we've got two more questions. One more question. And then what I'd like for you to do, if it's possible, to all our parents at the end, to all our parents and players and coaches all over the world, You know, they're mostly at the youth level, even high school. Any advice that you can give them from a coaching standpoint, just general advice about coaching. If you can do that at the end, that'd be great. But before we do that, question for you is this one. Now, I've always, in the last 4 or 5 years, I've always believed that coaches, including myself, I'd go out and coach. I wanted somebody to come out and evaluate what I'm doing in practice, evaluate what I'm doing in games. Maybe somebody better than me, because that's the way I got better as a coach. And I read in your book that you evaluated yourself at the end of the year. Can you talk about that? It's like an end of the year review. How'd you do that? How'd you evaluate yourself?
Well, I it was easier done because I evaluated myself every day. And then, you know, and then you take it month by month and, you know, hey, what did I learn from this past month? You do that times six. So by the time you get to the end of the season, you know, you had a good feeling. And then if you had a bunch of stuff that you didn't fix and you didn't have that good feeling, you know, but that's part of getting to the end where you say, okay, I did the best I could. But the other thing that the book sometimes is, you know, I was taught the philosophy that, you know, you don't fool yourself, but, you know, sometimes you fool other people. So the owners might say, we want you to come back. Well, I would never want to come back unless the owners wanted me back. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes they owe you money and they're not sure they want to save the money. So I said, if you don't owe me back, I'm gone. The next thing is, if they offer you, the owners and the general manager, if they offer you a job, you want to check the players. Because the owners might think that you have them, but if you don't have the players, then you're a fraud for coaching. You know, you got to get off it. And then the last thing is, then you decide, you know, do you have the fire in your gut? But I see it, you know, a lot of that, if you just follow what we talk about, that's all personalizing. You know, that's just mm-hmm. making sure that you look in the mirror and you like who you see.
Now, did you ask your coaches questions about, you know, what things you did? Like, how did the practice go? How about the game? You know, was there something different we should have done in the game? Did you guys talk about that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. They were encouraged, starting with spring training. You know, how'd the drill go? Is there a better way to do the drill? Yeah, that's how, you know, we always had good coaches and they had good expertise, sure. And then once the season, you know, if I see something that I didn't like the way our offense were playing, I'm going to go to them. Well, so if they saw something that they thought was, you know, that I didn't get the team ready to play, or maybe I gave up a run because I didn't play the infield, and they were encouraged to ask. And see, I think asking is your opportunity as a manager to explain what you were thinking. If once in a while you get caught, well, then you learn. But most of the time, you'll be able to impress whoever's asking you, your owner, general manager, another coach, a player, that you can impress them. Wow, he was thinking about things that I never thought about, you know, because that's how managers do it. You know, they look at things a lot deeper because it's your job.
And if you had, you know, and I know like you've spoken at many coaching clinics, but if you have coaches in front of you right now, which you do all over the world, just some advice, final advice that you'd give them if they're going to get into coaching, how to handle themselves or certain things you think they need to be doing right away. Anything, it's your floor. Take as long as you like, and then we'll finish it off.
I would start with the advice of George Kissel. He's a great, great legendary figure with the St. Louis Cardinals. The last year I was in uniform, kind of as a player, I was a player coach in 1977 with the St. Louis Cardinals. And George ran the minor leagues. He had big league and minor league experience. But and the next year I was going to start going into minor league management. He said, "Well, whatever you do, don't get into coaching or managing unless you can follow this formula. And that is, you got to look in the mirror and you say, do you truly love the game?" Well, yes, I do, George. He says, okay, that means that you have to learn as much as you can about the game, because that's part of coaching. You got to give these, your players, the ability to play the game correctly. And here's the way it works. And he says, what you'll do is the more you learn about the game of baseball, the more you're going to love it. And the more you love it, the more you're going to want to learn. And you have this wonderful cycle, and that's what I would talk about right now. Don't ever stop learning. Keep challenging yourself. It could be something as big as make a 300 hitter, or something as small as how to put the ball. No, it's not so small. Put the ball in place, play with two strikes. What's your two strike approach? But you're learning. And the more you learn, the more you love the game. And then just remember who you are. You know, you're the leader of the team, which means it's about the team. It's not about you. You want to put your players in a position to succeed. So whether it's the mental side of the game or the fundamental side or the physical side, you want to be responsible for getting them where they need to be mentally, physically, and fundamentally. And probably the last thing I'd say is this. you want to coach enthusiasm and excitement about the game. And most of the time that means that the first thing you coach is frame of mind. You want to make sure that the players' minds are in the right place. And if it's not, then it's your job to explain, persuade, demand, whatever it is, so that they get their minds right. And then they go into the practices and do the hard work to build skills, and they go out to play the game and do the best they can. So frame of mind is a critical thing nowadays. It used to be automatic. Now it's not.
Well, this has been an outstanding clinic for coaches and players and parents all over the world. Finally, Tony, off the field, you have a passion, and it's a great passion of mine, too. I love animals of all kinds, and you have a foundation called our Animal Rescue Foundation. Just tell us a little bit about it, how people can, go to it. The website, I believe, was rf.com, but I'm not 100% sure. If you can tell us about it, love for people to go see the website, because I think it's a great thing, and it's great to help animals in need out there.
Well, thank you, Pete. It's actually, the website is now arflife.org. Yeah. And it's got my name on it, Tony Russo's Animal Rescue Foundation. It's going into our 26th year, and we've got a dual mission. We want to take puppies and kittens and dogs and cats that would be euthanized, and we want to put them in with families and make them save their lives. And what you end up doing is you save a life, and the family's better off. The other part of the mission is we take pieces of, we take our animals, and they're like therapeutic with people in trouble, whether it's victims of violence, or it could be a senior away from his family, or somebody hospitalized, special needs. And lately, the last 4 or 5 years, we work with putting pets with vets. So it's, you can read all about us. It's, the animals are amazing. There's no medicine, no machines. It's just that wagging tail and that unconditional love. It's like magic.
And they do love you all the time, no doubt about that. We've got a couple of dogs. We love them. They're just like, sons and daughters. Okay, I'll tell you what, Tony, thank you very much for being on the show. You are a true Hall of Famer to coaches and players and parents all over the world, not just a manager, but a true and just a great person. I know I enjoyed being with you during my time. So I just want to thank you on the bottom of my heart from all our listeners for being on the show, because I know coaches are going to get better from just listening to the show.
Well, I appreciate it, Pete. And I think you got a wonderful idea for coaching beyond the box, out of the box. I think that's how innovations come. And I think it's a great concept. I'm pleased to be able to be a part of it.
Well, I appreciate it. And anytime we can be of any help, Tony, just ask. Just let me know. We do anything to help you out. And for everybody out there, we hope you join our next episode. Remember, coaches' education is the key to building the foundation of our sport. So keep getting smarter, as Tony said, daily. And one way you can do that is by listening to our show. The interviews are all free on podcast. Remember, we interview baseball's best coaching minds that have innovative thoughts, that love the challenge, sometimes the status quo. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. I'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.